Welcome to the Phil Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:03 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 10th. We had a nice rebound in silver today, following the downward dynamic that we had on Friday, and that at least contributes to at least a partial conclusion that we might be just looking at another step in this extremely impressive breakout. It's quite natural that we would see some consolidation in the region of $30, not least because it paused at 20, 25, and now 30. So there is obviously a tendency to pause around these big round numbers. Of course, it's overbought by any condition. However you would like to measure that, it's certainly overbought, but we have to at least pay some consideration to the fact that there was a very lengthy base formation, and ranges are explosions waiting to happen. So this is an explosive breakout, and as with all breakouts, they do tend to go faster and farther than anyone has been willing to contemplate based upon the inactivity of the ranging phase. So silver's breakout is still underway. It might be decades if we ever see silver trade below $20 again. I think those are the kinds of ways of thinking about the market, that we've had this incredible base formation completion, so it's extremely unlikely that silver will trade below $20 again in the future. That kind of thinking is probably something that people who haven't yet entered the market haven't really got their heads around. But of course, that doesn't mean we can't have volatility. And there is still the potential that silver could yet put in a first step above the base. We know what that looks like. Gold did that. It broke out and then consolidated. It did not pull all the way back to $1,400. But it did pull back over the course of a few months, and it even found support in the region of the lower side of that reaction at the pullback level in March, and has subsequently really rallied very impressively. Now, gold was in negative territory in here today, and that was following through on the downward dynamic that we had, but it wasn't an especially large dynamic move, but it was the biggest downward move we'd had in the context of this move up from the lows in June. There is the potential that that gold is at least going to pause and consolidate around this 2000 level. But what we are seeing is some appetite for leverage to the gold price. So that's part of the reason why silver is now outperforming. And I have been pointing out over the course of the last 6 weeks that when silver does start to outperform gold, then it does generally tend to outperform for the entire duration of the bull market. So we can that doesn't mean that it will outperform on every single day for the entire bull market. There will be occasions when silver does worse than gold, but the trend of silver outperforming gold is likely to be sustained for the entire bull market. Today we also saw that platinum was in positive territory. Now, it wasn't quite able to hold all of the advance, but that was a really quite large downward downside key day reversal we saw on Friday. So the fact that we did not have follow through in here today is a positive. And it suggests that we may be just in for some consolidation, and that there is the scope for platinum to complete its own base formation. It has been lagging. And part of the reason for that is because it is primarily an industrial metal. Demand for it collapsed with the breaking of the clean diesel bull market. And now the question is, how much demand will hydrogen fuel cells represent as in terms of catalytic demand for platinum? But then, of course, we also have the other side of the equation, that the South African platinum sector came very close to going out of business in the teeth of the bear market. Now, it did get a rescue from the rebound in palladium prices, but not enough to really justify additional investment in expanding platinum production. So we have a supply inelasticity meets rising demand potential. Now, this is still very early days, and we won't have true confirmation of that until well into the bull market, but it does look like that could be the case, because there isn't going to be any additional investment in platinum production. There's a total reliance on the palladium market producing some platinum as a byproduct. But then we also have the fact that rhodium prices are completely dependent on platinum production. And rhodium broke out in here today, and it has been ranging above the trend mean now for most of the last 6 months, and popped back above the $800 level in here today. It's obviously it's not a precious metal, but it is obviously it is the primary metal that is used for anti-tarnishing coats for precious metals like silver. Silver exposed to oxygen or to air for just a couple of weeks will go black, and the vast majority of sterling silver jewelry is coated in rhodium. And the cost of rhodium coating has gone up significantly over the course of the last 12 months, and that is likely to persist. So it's a significant industrial metal, but its production is almost entirely reliant on platinum mining. And with no investment likely in additional platinum production, then that's likely to also be a high beta investment vehicle for precious metals. So this is something that we've certainly seen evolve over the course of the last few weeks, that high beta ways of investing in gold are suddenly gaining a lot more attraction. And that is very reminiscent of what we saw in the last big bull market in the precious metals, that it took a couple of years for people to really accept that we were in a new bull market, but when the acceptance phase starts, then these high beta ways of investing do tend to get more attention. So when we then think about the stock market, well, the junior gold miners have just broken out. Now, they were in negative territory in here today, not in a dynamic manner, but we have a somewhat overbought condition. Stock market investors have not generally been as willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the miners as they have been to the raw metals. That was also a phenomenon we saw in the last bull market, but as long as these miners don't invest or don't borrow a pile of money to increase supply, then they should be in a condition where positive free cash flow will allow them to raise dividends. And that kind of potential for dividend growth should be something that will bolster attention for at least the larger cap companies and those mid-cap companies that move into a cash flow positive situation. We can certainly see that there are a significant number of gold miners that have got highly competitive yields even today. I believe the biggest dividend increase on the S&P 500 was from Newmont Mining in the last announcement. Obviously, this is the only big gold miner in the S&P 500, but for example, when we look at UK gold miners, then they are throwing off yields in the region of 3 and 4%, and that's competitive with the wider FTSE 100, which has got a yield of around 4%. Now, when we think about the outlook for stock markets, well, the pound has been somewhat steadier, while the euro was a little weaker in here today, not in a dynamic manner, certainly not. But one thing that we have seen with European equities is that they have been able to rally against a background of firmer currencies. And I think that is a very important development. It does suggest that we're going to see additional interest in this in the region from international investors, because the more that the dollar deteriorates, then the greater the rationale will be for pulling money out of the USA. Now, the dollar index is oversold in the short term, but it's going to have to do a lot to break the overall downward bias. When we look at the Asia dollar index, the renminbi was in positive territory in here today, and it is now back above the trend mean. It hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but there is clear potential that it will do that. When we look at the Japanese yen, the Japanese just do not want to allow the yen to appreciate any further, so they are certainly defending the 104 area. And the Nikkei is right above the region of the trend mean. And if it can sustain a move above the 24,000 level, then we're back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term. The second section index has so often been a lead indicator and a somewhat less choppy chart than the Nikkei, and it was in positive territory in here today. But it hasn't quite yet been able to break back above the trend mean. But I think it is quite likely that we're going to see that. Now, when we then think about what's going on in China, well, the crackdown on democracy activists and secessionists in Hong Kong was intensified in here today. The CSI 300 continues to hold the region of the 4500 level. I think it is likely that the Chinese authorities are going to continue to support the stock market, perhaps not to let it surge higher, but certainly to buy it on the dips in order to at least put forward the facade of stability, even while there is a very clear policy to clamp down on any kind of dissent in Hong Kong. But Tencent, having bounced off its lows on Friday, was in negative territory in here today. Now, that is breaking down out of this short-term range, and it is increasing the potential that we are going to pull back towards the region of the trend mean. The potential for WeChat to be banned in the USA is certainly something that will, I think, weigh on sentiment in the short term. It's probably not something that is going to have a big impact on earnings, but it will have an impact on its potential to grow earnings internationally, and most particularly with investments in gaming companies. When we think about what's going on in China, then there is obviously a big portion of what's going on as part of the great game, and also to do with the US electoral cycle. Taiwan, on the other hand, has been able to clearly break out and continues to do well. I think we need to look at a very long-term chart to get some perspective on Taiwan, because it's at new all-time highs. And that was an incredibly lengthy hiatus below the 10,000 level. We had a clear period of ranging for nearly 3 years in a first step above that long base, and now it is resuming the uptrend. There is the potential here that Taiwan is a lead indicator for what we can anticipate from Japan. The two markets are quite closely tied together in terms of their growth potential. They both offer leverage to many of the same sectors, and Taiwan was a more leveraged version of Japan during the big bull market in the 1980s, and perhaps it's likely to be the same thing on this occasion. So I think this is something that is noteworthy in terms of what we might anticipate from what's happening in Japan. And there is the scope, at least, that Taiwan and Japan will get more favorable trading terms than they have at present from the potential for greater geopolitical tensions with China. And that might be part of the reason why their stock markets are doing that bit better than regional comparisons. It's also, I think, noteworthy that South Korea was in positive territory in here today, and it has clearly now broken the sequence of lower rally highs over the last 2.5 years. So that's a clear break on the upside. And when we then think about the outlook for the respective currencies, they've been really quite steady, and the Korean won continues to appreciate. It has and it's been ranging for a really quite prolonged period between about 1,000 and 1,250, and it's pulling back from that area and has now broken back below the tr or the dollar is breaking back below the trend mean in here right now. So while we still have some evidence of the dollar steadying against the euro, there is plenty of evidence for the dollar continuing to trend down against a number of the Asian currencies. And interestingly, that continues to be particularly the case against the Philippine peso. And it has been now trending higher, or the dollar has been trending down against it for nearly 2 years. Now, it is somewhat overbought in the short term, but it's certainly has broken the very lengthy period of underperformance over the period from 2013 to 2018. Then, as we think about competitors to China, the Indian rupee remains really quite steady. The Nifty index was not quite able to hold on to all of its gain in here today, but it is still trending higher, and it has continued to hold support in the region of the trend mean. Now, if we flip back and think about what's going on Wall Street, the S&P 500 was in positive territory in here today, and it's really within just what I think it's only about 40 points of the peak from back in February. We've also seen that the Dow Jones Industrials has been steady as well. It was up another 300 points and is up to a new recovery high in here today. We've also seen that the Russell 2000 has firmed from the 200-day moving average and is coming back up towards the upper side of the range that persisted for most of 2019. It has been underperforming for a pretty prolonged period, but at least now we're seeing some evidence of renewed enthusiasm for small cap stocks. The transportation index has also recovered all of the decline put in the early part of the year. And it's, I think, worth considering as well that the transportation index had peaked in early 2018. It failed upside break towards the end of 2018, but it was never subsequently able to push above those levels. So it's now back at an important area around the 11,000. If it can sustain a move higher from here, then that will be a clear indication that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But what it also suggests is that we're getting a broadening of the recovery, and that investors may be rotating away from the extremely large cap sector. So the Nasdaq 100 was in negative territory in here today. I do think that the market cap for Apple at approaching the 2 trillion mark last week was a really quite significant catalyst for some reassessment. So there is, I think, the potential here that we're going to see some of the more beaten down sectors outperform. And even airlines, which had pulled back aggressively, have now firmed from the region of the upper side of that range that persisted in April and May. If we zoom out and just look at this over the course of the last few years, we had the clear acceleration, loss of downward momentum, massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We've now had a first step above the Type 2 bottom. So it is quite likely that the airline sector has bottomed. Now, it's I think a big reach to think that it's going to go all the way back to 350 in very short order, but the quantity of money that's been poured into the sector by the various governments around the world means that they're not going to go bust, and they may not even be asked to repay the money that's been poured into them. So that is going to sustain these business models for a while longer. And I think one thing that is interesting is that investors are still very reticent to think about what 2021 is going to look like. And they're still fearful of what a second wave will look like. But it's worth considering that the Southern Hemisphere didn't really have a flu season this year because people were social distancing to such an extent. And if social distancing measures persist into the third quarter and fourth quarter, well, are we going to have a big flu season in the Northern Hemisphere? That's a big question. And if we have a similar experience to the Southern Hemisphere, then there's the potential that we're not going to have a second wave. And by the time we get into 2021, it's very likely that we're going to have a range of vaccines available. Then the challenge will be to try and convince people to get the vaccine. But it's quite likely that we will have a vaccine and that it will be safe. The big innovation that Moderna is trading off of is that they already had something ready to go and that they have something that is reasonably safe. Then we have the kind of solution that's being provided by AstraZeneca and the Oxford University, and they are using a monkey adenovirus. So they're betting at least that because the vast majority of people will have had no real experience with a monkey virus, that the payload that it is delivering will be more effective. And that is why I think people have been more willing to anticipate that the Oxford University solution, which had been primed and ready to go for Ebola, and has now been repurposed for coronavirus, well, at least we know that it's safe. And that is perhaps the most bullish factor overall. And I think that is why we're seeing this rotation, that while the media are still concentrating on the number of cases, which I think is still a red herring, considering the fact that particularly in the USA, the lag between when someone is tested and when they get a result is so wide that the figures are completely meaningless. Then you have the additional factor that demographics matter much more than the number of cases. And then we have the additional factor that the mortality rates continue to contract. Even in Sweden, where there was a lax approach taken to lockdowns, the mortality rate has cratered. So, but of course, there are idiosyncrasies to the Swedish market that are not applicable to everywhere else, considering the fact that more than half of people live on their own anyway. And that amounts to a certain amount of social distancing that you just don't get in countries that have got large, multi-generational households, like Italy, for example, or in significant portions of the USA, particularly in the less well-off portions of society, or among the particularly among the Latino community. So there are these idiosyncrasies that are driving the spread of the virus, and yet the mortality rates are contracting. And that is effectively what the stock market is telling us, that we have these recoveries that are underway, and we have this massive amount of liquidity that continues to be pumped into the markets. Then I think it's interesting that the Federal Reserve is no longer increasing the size of their balance sheet, but they are loath to take money out of the balance sheet because they know what kind of effect that would have on asset prices. So there is still this tailwind in terms of the continued supply of liquidity. The central banks, our central bank balance sheet charts are on a composite basis, is in the region of $27 trillion. So that's just an incredible amount of money that has been poured into the markets. And it's not even a complete measure because it doesn't look at the amount of additional money that is being spent in terms of unemployment benefits and all of these additional stimulative measures that are being poured into the global economy. Well, it does suggest that we are in a bubbly environment, that valuations are going to continue to move higher. Eventually, we will have an inflationary outcome. You simply can't reduce interest rates in the entire world towards zero and continue to increase the supply of money. If you eventually get the economic recovery that you're trying to achieve, then you're inevitably going to have an inflationary problem. And that is also something that is potentially going to be an issue in 2021. But this is an election year, so they're going to continue to pump money into the market at least until November. And after that, it's going to be the next administration's problem to deal with. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.